Welcome to Full and Share Theology. We're your hosts, Justin Mercier and Bruce Pagano, and this is Theology for Everyone. Welcome back to Full and Share Theology. We're your hosts, Justin Mercier and Bruce Pagano.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, and today we are in part six, maybe? Part seven?
Part six, I think. Episode 20, though. I know that.
Sweet. Awesome. Of our James series. And it's now summertime.
Yeah. I'm sweating. It's pretty warm in here. You want to turn the fan on?
I was going to say, yeah. Here's the thing is, like, I'm becoming less and less of, like, a husky person, but I think this is always going to be my case forever and ever.
That your body temperature is just elevated?
All the time. Yeah.
That's better.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. Okay. Loving this. That's the thing is, I hate the summer. Like, people are like, I love the summer. I'm like, I hate the summer. I hate it.
I think I'm a fall guy.
Yeah. Fall is great. Like, colder temperatures, sometimes rainy. It's beautiful. And then I love the winter. I just, you know, I like being cold. I like wearing sweatshirts. I like, you know, I'm feeling cozy, hot chocolate, you know, that sort of thing. In the summer, I'm like, I'm burning, I'm sweating.
I like the summer if I get to sit on a beach.
Sure.
That's it. Like, that's
with a cool breeze.
Yeah. And a because I mean, like, on the, yeah, totally. Yeah. Because, like, on the coast, yeah, like, maybe it's, a, you know, 90 degrees or 100 degrees, but, like,
yeah,
I always feel like it's just cooler.
Yeah.
Because of the breeze coming off the water.
Totally. And like, I mean, especially which ocean you're going to.
Right. And I'm a West Coast guy.
Yeah.
Like, I grew up on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And so I love California.
Okay.
There are better beaches in the Atlantic side. There just are.
Is that right?
There just are. I mean, yeah. like where I grew up, beaches were always, like, grainy and, like.
Yeah.
And.
Full of trash and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. But they just always kind of, like, grainy. Like, yeah. It was always. Okay, it's sand. I get it.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Like, you go over to the Caribbean area.
Yeah.
And it's all, like, powdery white sand.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, that's one of the things.
I've never, like, been to a beach that's disappointed on the Atlantic side.
So, oh, really? Mm-mm. Wow.
And I've been to the Grand Bahamas. I've been to Cocoa Beach. I've been to Mexico. So, like, where did we go? Not Cozumel. Cancun.
Yeah.
And I just... I've been to beaches up the East Coast in Virginia and Maryland and South Carolina, I think. And I've never been to one that's been really disappointing. Wow. So,
yeah, well, I grew up in Oregon, so it was always like...
They're all disappointing?
It was just like, you know, you gotta be careful of the wood and, like, beer bottles.
Although
and
I've heard, like, Cannon Beach and stuff like that are... Or Canyon Beach or Cannon Beach?
Cannon Beach.
Cannon Beach is gorgeous.
No, it is, but still, it's like, I don't know, it's just interesting to me. Like, I never was, like, it's like one of the things where, like, they didn't groom the beaches or anything.
Right.
You know?
But, and the water's always colder, right? Even though people swim in it, the water's always colder.
Like, once you get numb, then you're good to go.
Okay.
But you have to get fully numb, essentially.
Yeah.
Cause
oh, Port Isabel on South Padre Island.
Yeah.
I've been to that, and that's on the, like, Gulf, and that's a gorgeous white sand beach, too. Wow. Except on the state side. I take that back. We did go to Galveston, and Galveston, just in general, is gross because there's a lot of cruise liners there.
Yeah.
Like, we pulled up and saw people playing in what looked to me like poopy mud water.
Yeah.
And I was just like, they are playing in gross water. And then we realized, oh, it's all the water. We did not play in the water, and we promptly walked the boardwalk for 15 minutes and was just like, this was a waste of a drive. And
then we left. Yeah.
No offense to anyone who lives in Galveston, but it was gross.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think it was, I was going to say maybe it was after Katrina, but I don't think it was. I think it was before Katrina. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been to Hawaii and stuff like that, and they have really good beaches and
Hawaii
stuff.
Hawaii does have good beaches.
You know, Waikiki and that sort of thing. So,
what's the Big Island?
The Big Island?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
Is that Hawaii?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We were on Oahu.
Wait, which one's the military base on Pearl Harbor?
I think that's Waikiki.
Oh, okay.
Isn't it? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
Maybe. But that's the one that we went
or,
to.
Or,
we
were... or, oh, Oahu, I think is.
Okay, whichever one that is, that's the one we went to. It was 4 days. It was a layover.
Yeah, okay.
And we were moving back from Japan, and it was a four-day layover, and we were pretty jet-lagged, but it was fun. We enjoyed it, and we wish we could have had more time. I take that back. Japan had some gorgeous beaches.
Yeah.
Like, we went to some really awesome beaches in Japan.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I want to – someday I want to travel. I just want to travel for sure. Go check places out and experience different cultures and that sort of thing.
Most of my travel was at the hands of the military.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And as I was saying before we went on the air.
Yeah.
On the air? We're not on the air. Yeah. But before we started recording, they sucked the fun out of pretty much everything. So even travel sometimes is just the fun sucked right out of it.
Yeah, right.
They're like, this is the military. Nobody issued you fun.
Yeah. I today... Just for fun, I like watch random YouTube videos, and one came up. It was like one of these Travel Channel or A&E specials or whatever, and it was like, airlines overbooking. What's that about? And then like it showed just all these angry people being like, I bought my tickets 5 months ago, and now you're telling me that you only have 3 seats. And we have 6 people in our family. Like we can't just all not go. And they're just like, sorry, it's overbooked. They're like, but we bought our tickets 5 months ago. They're like, well, it's the risk that you take. And they're like, what? You know,
like it doesn't even make sense. Like, how can you oversell and get away with it? Like, how's that allowed?
I know. I don't know. And like, it's just like about that whole thing. And it's just so interesting how like the customer service aspect of it, they're like, sorry, like, you know, and then like it's a couple of videos. They're like, if you continue to argue with me, I'll just take away your tickets and you won't be allowed to go at all. And we're just going to refund your money and you can figure out your own way home. And they're just like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, but they're like, they have the power to do that. Like they just can just be like, here's a refund. Good luck. Like you're not on any flights now, you know?
Dang, man.
I mean, and then of course that only got worse with COVID because then they were like doing the mask thing, but then now the mask thing is gone.
But, just like, domestically, right?
I think so. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But it's just very interesting how, like, I could totally see why they were ticked. Because they would be like, okay, you know, what we'll do is, you know, we'll ask some passengers, hey, if you come off the flight, we'll refund you your ticket. And we'll give you and we'll upgrade you to, like, first class or whatever on the 8:30 flight. And it's, like, you know, a noon flight or whatever. Right. But, like, they won't offer that to the people who they're trying to take the seats away from.
Right.
Like, they'll be like, sorry, we can bump you to the 8. And they're like, I want compensated. They're like, we don't have any compensation for you. They're like, but you'll compensate people for volunteering.
Right.
Well, because they're already on the plane, and we're going to take them off.
Although, I did, like, there's this lady on TikTok that's just, like, a lawyer, and I read the fine print so you don't have to.
Yeah.
And one of the things she said was, like, if they remove you, they have to compensate you.
Yeah.
So, like, those three, if there's 6 of them and there's 3 of them aren't getting on the plane, they have to compensate up to $1,000 or something like that, depending on.
And I think this was filmed in, like, either the early 2000s or the 90s, but, like, it was because it seemed older, you know?
Yeah.
But I remember this one family was,
such
like,
garbage.
They were, like, on their way home, and they were, like, we're going to not only refund your tickets, we'll get you on the 8:30 flight, we'll upgrade you to first class, and we'll give you each $200 vouchers for dinner or whatever. And, like, this family of three was like, yeah, we'll take that, you know? And, like, I was like, yeah, I probably would take that, too. Like, yeah, you know, like, I get $600, dinner, my flight, and I get a whole another flight, essentially, like, for free. I would take that. You know, for, like, what, 6 hours or something in the airport? Yeah. And so it's just, like, very interesting, that whole concept. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, can you imagine doing that anywhere else? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, could you imagine, like, dinner reservations? You have dinner reservations at your anniversary, and they say, oh, sorry, we give your table away.
A hotel room.
We overbooked. Hotel room? Yeah.
Yeah, we overbooked our hotel. Like, how did you overbook your hotel? Like, I reserved a room.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, we just did. Yeah. We didn't know if everybody would show up. Who doesn't show up for their flights just to not show up?
Yeah,
like,
right.
How does that happen?
Right. Yeah. So, it was very interesting.
If they don't show up, they still paid for the ticket.
Yeah, right.
Like,
Yeah, very interesting that whole concept. I'm like, dang.
So I don't believe America when they talk, like, American companies when it comes to, like, flight and stuff like that. Because when we get to, like, when we get over to the UK, I'm not even joking. A flight round trip from Scotland to London, which is like a, you know, 3 or 4 hour flight, even into Europe, you can get a round trip flight for like $43, $50. Round trip. And that's not with the bag. You're like, you're going to pay extra if you're going to check a bag, but it's not like $300 extra. And I think I've said it on here before. My wife, my daughter, and I, with two checked bags, booked three individual one-way flights, one from London to Edinburgh, Scotland, one from Edinburgh, Scotland to Belfast, Ireland, and one from Belfast, Ireland to London, England.
Yeah.
And the all three legs with three or with two checked bags for each leg was $430 for three people.
Jeez.
$430 for three people.
But it took you $1,400 to even get to England.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm just like, I don't believe you. Like,
I know.
Like, so you're telling me that it cost $150 one way for me by myself to fly to Seattle from Boise to Seattle?
A 1 hour flight.
Like,
yeah.
Are you serious? There's no way. Right. There's no way. And it does. Mm-hmm. Like, come on, man. Like, and you're overbooking the flight and you're over, like, and you're selling my seat.
Yeah, right. Isn't that crazy?
I don't believe you.
Yeah.
That's why I heard something today that was just like, Americans in general trust each other less than a lot of other industrialized countries, trust their government less, and trust institutions less than any other industrialized country. Yeah. And like, they have this scale that they run it. But like, the fact that we don't trust churches and colleges and corporations, and like, they've earned that. They've earned that, and they've created this culture of mistrust. So I can't believe anything that you say. If you're a Democrat or a Republican and I'm opposite you, I can't believe anything you say because I don't trust you.
Right.
I can't believe that my government has my best interest at heart when they're trying to enact laws, because I don't trust you. I can't believe, like, I don't trust the airline. That's why I'm going to fight with you and argue with you.
Yeah, right. That's interesting.
And other industrialized countries are just like, oh, you're going to enact this law? Like, we fought against it, but in the end, okay. Like,
yeah, right.
And maybe that's a naive view, but they don't rate, like, high on the mistrust. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's very interesting how, like, you go overseas and all of a sudden, like, mass shootings, school shootings, prices of things, like, how they all significantly drops.
Right.
But like,
except gas. Gas is the same everywhere right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not Joe. It's not Sleepy Joe.
Yeah, right. But it's like I remember watching a commercial where like they were just interviewing people in England. They're like, look at this, you know, 2 minutes worth of American commercials, and like four out of the five commercials were all like, you know, take this drug for your high blood pressure. Take this drug for your sleepless nights. Like, and they're like, why do they have so many drug commercials? Like, why?
Yeah, yep.
And they're just like, are they all like just so sick that they all need these medications?
You know, what's one of the things that I saw when we were there this last time, just this last March?
Mm-hmm.
We had to get tested, COVID tested, to fly back.
Yeah.
And so one of the places was a pharmacy. So we just went to this pharmacy and they tested us.
Yeah.
And, well, I guess that'd be like going to Walgreens or whatever. Mm-hmm. Same thing. Right on the window. Don't even need a doctor. They were just like, feeling down, feeling low, no low energy. Come and get a vitamin B12 shot. Like,
wow.
Like that's their solve. They're just like you don't feel well. Like you got low energy. You don't need to go see a doctor. Like, come and get a vitamin B12 shot first. And if that helps, then it helps.
Mm.
If not, and it was like $8.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? Like it was 8 pounds. It was like 8 pounds. You walk in, you're like, I'd like a vitamin B12 shot. They're like, absolutely. They give you a vitamin B12 shot. You're like, I feel a little bit better. And then you go about your day.
Wow.
Here's my 8 pounds.
Wow.
And here they're just like, nope, you need an antidepressant.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it's going to cost you $300.
Yeah, yeah, right.
If insurance covers it, it'll be 12.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I know. It's just so interesting. So interesting. But, you know. I was saying, vitamin B12 in heaven will be free. So, like,
right,
yeah. They just call it the holy shot.
The holy shot of wisdom. No, that didn't work out. I was trying to transition.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, what are we drinking? Oh, you're already done.
Yeah.
You killed that.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, it's Waitsburg whiskey. Oola.
Yeah.
Oola. We've had it before.
Yeah, it was really good.
It's got a vanilla, kind of a vanilla to it. Yeah,
yeah, it was really smooth, really good. So anyway, that's what we were.
Drinking. That's what you were drinking. Yeah. And I moved the bottle upstairs because I had to refill it. So I don't even have more.
Nice. Yeah,
I didn't even think to grab it.
I know. You should be hiding something somewhere.
I know, right? There should be some in that Van Gogh.
That's right. That's cool. Cool. Yes. So we are talking about James 3:13-18.
Mm-hmm.
And just continuing.
Wisdom.
Now, this one, yeah, wisdom, which, I don't know if you want to start by reading it or whatnot.
Yeah, we can.
Okay. Yeah, I will read it. Now, I have the Message version. Is that the version I should read?
Or should I read it? You can. I'm not going to. I didn't read it. I went with the CSB.
Okay.
Or NASB. Do I go to NASB?
I can switch to NASB. All right. So, this is James 3:13-18. All right, it says, "Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior, his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. The wisdom is not that which comes from above, but it's earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is a disorder in every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peace-loving, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial, free of hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace."
Yep. And so, did you want to give input on that before I launch in?
No, I just think it's I think when it talks about wisdom from above, I've always thought of Proverbs, obviously.
Yeah.
And Proverbs says, the beginning of wisdom is to fear the Lord.
Sure. Yep.
And the fear of the Lord is to have like a reverence and an awe for his mighty power, kind of a thing. Like,
yep.
There was one time when I studied Proverbs, and like it was interesting how like it would say like the beginning of wisdom is fear of the Lord, and it would say like the fear of the Lord is this, and then it would say, you know, something like this is that, which is the fear of the Lord. And so like we were able to kind of create a thing, and it's just that whole concept of like, you want to get wisdom, because if you get wisdom, then you understand God. Like, and so I just think it's, yeah, I think that's the thing, is that like, I don't know if we necessarily get wisdom. I think that we've learned how to say a lot of wise things.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But we don't get it. Like, we don't get what wisdom is. Like, and it's interesting because like, there's people who like, are like, oh, I have the rebukes of life have given me wisdom, you know? But then there's other people that like are like, whoa, that was profound. Like that, and like they, it just like falls out of their mouth. I feel like those people get like wisdom, but it's like the people who are like, they just try to say wise things because they heard something wise.
That like they're just repeating.
They're just repeating.
It that reminds me of the movie Good Will Hunting. Have you seen Good Will Hunting?
Uh-huh, yeah.
There's that scene where Rob Williams is sitting on the bench with Matt Damon. And he was just like, I bet if I asked you about love, you could quote me all the sonnets that you've ever read, that Shakespeare's written, but you couldn't tell me what it feels like to look a woman in her eyes and know that she's like looked deep into your soul and that you couldn't survive without her.
Yeah.
Like, right. Like he's like, if I asked you about loss, you would quote this and this and that,
yeah.
But like, you wouldn't know a thing about sitting with your wife who's dying of cancer, and the doctors know that visiting hours don't pertain to you, and like sleeping in a chair that's not a bed, and he's like, but you wouldn't know that.
Right.
You'd just be able to quote things about loss.
Yeah.
And he's getting to that very thing that you're talking about, where it's just like, you can memorize and recite the lots of things.
Yeah.
That's not wisdom. Right. That's knowledge. You know, wisdom is like, how do you apply in a, I'm going to say like a morally good, which is subjective at points, but like a morally good way, the knowledge that you have.
Yeah. Right.
And this type of wisdom, is really meant for one thing, like not one thing in general, but I mean specifically, but like in generally speaking, it's meant for like the wisdom to be like Jesus,
yeah,
in the ways that matter. Right. Right. And so, yeah. Yeah, I think that there are a lot of, I mean, it's part of the reason why we named, and why I was stuck on like, oh, I want to call this folding chair theology, is because we're playing on that idea of armchair theologians who are just like, oh, like I know the Bible, and I, yeah. And it's just like, okay, like, do you, or are you just like re-quoting, which there's nothing wrong with reading Aquinas and like, these old scholars and theologians and then requoting them, there's nothing wrong. But if you don't understand it and have a measure for what it means to apply to your life,
right,
in a way that honors Christ, like it's not godly wisdom. It's just human knowledge. Mm-hmm. Right?
I mean, yeah. Like, yeah, and that's what I think is always really interesting is like, sometimes I feel like people who are in like leadership, they like try to personify wisdom, but then when you talk to them, they just rifle off the like whatever the cool phrase is.
Yeah.
You know, at that time.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no, can't you just have a normal conversation with me?
Right.
You know, like, yeah, well, you know, glory to God in all things. Like, right. Choose joy, brothers. Like, you know, it's like, what? Hold on. Wait, right. You know.
My wife used to, like, especially when she was going through just a really difficult time, one of the things that frustrated her the most was like going to like a women's group and it being like,
oh yeah,
straight up Christianese. And she was just like, I don't think that we're having any real conversation. I don't think we're having a real conversation. They're just saying things that, and it's like going to church and just being like, man, I had a really rough week. I'll pray for your brother. And then they like,
yeah,
they're gone. They're on their way. It's just like, oh, got to get in there. Don't we got to get in there? It's just like, oh, okay. Well, I just was hoping that maybe you'd spend some time with me, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So this, I think it's important to kind of point out like what we've talked about already, but like up to this point, James, has talked, essentially he's talking about maturity, like being a mature Christian, being mature in Christ, as his follower. And he starts off by saying, it looks like being doers of the word instead of just hearers of the word. Like it's not enough to just say, oh, I hear it and then repeat it. Yeah. It has to be played out in your action. And he kind of puts an exclamation point on that by talking about playing favorites. And really he's talking about serving the least of these and how it connects to your faith. Because it's a faith that proves itself through our works.
Right.
And kind of like touches back on that idea of being doers of the word versus hearers of the word. Like he keeps coming back to this thing is like, faith has these three parts and one of them is enacted loyalty. It's actually shows itself in action of loyalty to the person that you're declaring fealty to,
right,
and that you're professing like mental assent with, and it's aimed at serving the least and the low. Like this whole thing about favoritism is not about just like not favoriting the rich, but really more than just not favoriting the rich, like serving the low and the least with a faith that moves you to action toward them. Right.
Right.
And so then he kind of seemingly moves on to this warning to teachers about controlling their tongue. But it's still about connecting this whole thing, to the idea of favoritism and the low and the least, in that what you teach as a teacher will either cause people to other other people or create a desire in them to seek right standing between them and God and them and other people, right? Right. And so as teachers, we have, like, he's warning us to be careful because teachers are, as a teacher, you're going to impact the way people see other people and right. see God, right?
Right.
And so then he launches into this discussion about wisdom. And it's really just a continuation of the whole faith and works discussion, because he's going to talk about that, like, almost immediately when he starts talking about wisdom. So in verse 13, he uses these words, be wise and understanding.
Yeah.
And so essentially wise means be an expert in, and understanding means, be intelligent about, but like an expert in what, and intelligent about what.
Right.
And so the very next part of the verse, he gets into that where he's just like, look, your conduct, your good conduct or your behavior or works,
yeah,
the things that you do,
yeah,
the things you do based on how you behave,
yeah,
are the things that you should be experts in. And so he's connecting faith, works, our words, and our behavior to wisdom. He's saying, look, wisdom, being an expert follower of Christ, will manifest itself in these ways, in your faith that leads to works, that creates words that encourage other people to connect with each other and God.
Isn't it interesting? Like, I'm just bringing up the Carl Lentz thing. Just like, one of his biggest messages was purity, purity of mind, purity of body. Like, that's
yeah,
thing.
Yep.
And that was like his big message that he kept over and over and over telling. But then, like, his ultimate failure was purity.
Right.
So, like, isn't, I think it's interesting how, like, and maybe this is not true for, you know, church leaders in general, but I just found it really interesting that, like, the thing that he was talking about was the thing that he struggled with. And I wonder how common that is. Like, you know, I just wonder how common, like, if a pastor struggles with identity, then they just talk about identity, you know, like, or if they struggle with knowledge, they just talk about knowledge, you know, like.
Do you think, though, that, like, it's something that they could have struggled with, and then all of a sudden, like, they find peace in it, and they find answers in God in it, and so that becomes their central message? Because I think of Tony Campolo, and Tony Campolo is just like his big thing is just like, we want to be a church that throws, you know, 3 a.m. parties for whores, birthday parties for whores. And his whole thing is just like, we should be a church that welcomes in the whore, and shows up at a diner at 3 a.m. and throws parties for her. Because we should be that welcoming, and it gets people mad at him. But like, that message is built out of the fact that he experienced that. Like, he experienced that, and it was this moment of realization for him. And there's this larger story to it, I'm sure, but like, there's this moment of realization for him that was just like, oh, this is, I've not been this person, and I should be this person if I'm trying to follow Christ. And so, like, maybe it is the case, but I don't know that it's the case 100% of the time.
Probably, yeah.
Right. I mean, my message, the message that I have for community is based around the fact that I didn't have it. I experienced it, and then when I left it, I want to experience it again. And everything else that I've learned about following Jesus and what it looks like to live inside the kingdom is undergirded by this idea of community is the only way. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And I think I'm struggling with creating community in that I'm trying to find, and I think I've found, people that I want to do community, you know, do life with. But I've walked through, Bonhoeffer says, like, your idea of community can't be bigger than the reality of community, because then you'll
be disappointed.
Then you'll mess it up. Like, no, like, not just be disappointed, you'll mess it up. Like, you will want, you'll have this idea of community that will trump the actual community that's being formed, and you will hurt it. And so I don't, like, I think that if I was so stuck on an idea of community and needed that to come to fruition versus I'm open to what community could look like as we figure out what it looks like to live together. I think then it could be detrimental and hurtful. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. And just to expand on that just a little bit, like, so through your time of let's say trying to build community, you know, anytime that the community that you've tried building a community and like, let's say at the end of it, it didn't pan out.
Right. Yeah.
Do you go back to the drawing board and go, okay, what, where did I have it wrong? Or is it more of like, no, they were wrong and I'm just going to just find a different group of people and I'm just going to do the same thing?
I've done both just because like,
yeah,
because of the type of person that I am, it's always this like self-deprecating reflection where it's just like, yeah, I must have messed that up. Like I must have done something wrong at some point. Yeah. And so going back to the drawing board to try and figure out where I went wrong, was probably my default.
Yeah. Or did anyone ever give you like feedback? Like they're like, oh, you, this is reasonable.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've been in a decades long conversation with multiple people about what it looks like and where I've maybe missed the mark. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how is that? Like, is it intuitive or is it like, nah, they're crazy?
No, I we've talked about, and I really do try and start from the premise, like I might have this wrong.
Yeah.
I'm pretty confident in it because of the conversations that I've had, yeah, and the prayer that I put into it and the study of the Bible and the communication or the conversations I've had with other people, in developing it. I was confident enough to write a book about it. So
best-selling book.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. but I think, I think I've left situations where I'm like, where I was disappointed. I didn't think like they're idiots and they're wrong, that like,
yeah,
I because of who I am, I always take things to heart. I always take things to heart.
Yeah.
But I think that I've left situations where I'm just like, that's not what we talked about. Like, like, and then later it, you know, comes out that it was just like, oh, yeah, we should have done that thing that we talked about and we just weren't ready. Like I've had those conversations. I have had conversations where I've tried to implement it inside of church, right, where like pastors are like, hey, come do this thing. I love your vision. And then it, then, yeah, yeah, then what becomes what becomes the reality is like, well, not all of your vision. Like I want
just the part that
this part, yeah, where you can administrate and manage stuff, but I want you to do it my way.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, that's not the thing that we talked about. And in that I walk away thinking, you didn't even know what you were asking. Like you didn't, like you, not that I think that they're idiots, but I'm just like, man, like you either one, you weren't honest, or two, you had like, you were so closed off that you weren't actually willing to listen to the thing. And you were so like tight-fisted with your vision,
yeah,
that there was no room to expand that vision. But that, like, whatever. And I've said this multiple times to, yeah, to pastors that I've worked with and churches that I've tried to plant with. Hey, it's your thing. That's fine. Like, just tell me how you want to do your thing and we'll do your thing. Just be honest about it.
Right.
And the response has been in the past, no, 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 this is our thing. And I'm like, but it's not our thing.
Yeah.
Like we're not developing vision together.
Yeah.
You're developing vision and you want people to come underneath your vision, and fine. That's fine. If we're Apple, but we're not Apple. And, mm-hmm, and so, either this is, yeah, our thing and there's room for expanding that vision,
yeah,
with other people who are buying in, with, yeah, other stakeholders, or there's not.
And isn't that kind of what this is talking about, where it's just kind of like these teachers who are like, oh, I'm buying it, but at the end of the day it's my vision, it's me, like it's about my,
yeah, and we're gonna talk, you know, about this here in a minute. We're, yeah, gonna, yeah, talk about that,
yeah,
selfish ambition,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't think that it's that in every case, but there are certainly those cases. Like you look at Hillsong, you look, yeah, at like Mark Driscoll,
John MacArthur,
John MacArthur, like
the whole SBC.
Yeah, currently the whole SBC, Southern Baptist Convention,
and the Lutheran. I mean, I sent you the whole thing about the Lutheran Church. Yep,
and at least they seem to be trying to do something. Yes, I guess, but that doesn't absolve them. Anyway, at some point, it's got to absolve you. Of having to relive. I don't know. Anyway, that's a bigger conversation. but yeah, I think that there are some people that are just like, that don't see it that way. And they're just like, I'm just trying to live out the vision that God gave me. And it's just like, no, that's cool. But like, just be honest about that. Like, this is the vision that I have,
right,
and there's no room for expanding it. And I'm cool with that. Like, I'm a big boy. I'm 45 years old. Like,
right,
it's, I'm cool with it. Just be honest about it. And, yeah, and you don't have to like pussyfoot around it. Like, it's just like, no, it's cool. It's cool. And so, yes, it is talking about that later that some people do. I like, so he's connecting all these things with the way that we behave and like saying that, like, hey, he's saying that if we have wisdom from the Holy Spirit, in that we're being led to become an expert in the way of Jesus, right? Because that's like our goal. Like, if we're disciples, what's a disciple?
Like a student of
a student trying to learn, a rabbi's ways,
right?
Yeah, and like literally trying to figure out, like, how do I imitate this rabbi, become like him, and then give that to other people, right?
Yeah,
and so if we are seeking wisdom,
right,
which is the ability to become an expert in the way of Jesus, our conduct, our behavior, the works that we do, will reveal that. And that's it. Like it's when he says your behavior, like he says your works in verse 13, like he's using the same word as he did chapters ago when he said faith without works is dead.
Right.
Like he's using the same word. Yeah. It literally, like, the things that you do, the fruit that you bear, the tasks that you complete.
Yeah.
And so he gets into verse 14. And starts talking about this contrary wisdom, right? What he doesn't call wisdom, this thing contrary to wisdom. And so the, if wisdom looks like Christ, or looks like this Christ-like behavior that is focused on works that care for other people.
Yeah.
So if the wisdom of Christ, wisdom from above, learning to be an expert in Jesus is others focused, because it's always others focused. Everything Jesus does is focused on others, right? Everything he does. Nothing he does is focused on self. Nothing.
Yeah.
All the healings, dying on the cross, resurrection. He sets his rights and status aside, comes down to earth to become low, to serve us. And he says, I came that I not be served, but that I serve. Right? Everything is others focused. So an expert, a wise person in Christ is others focused, right? Contrasting that is this thing of envy and selfish ambition, right? And envy is kind of this contentious rivalry, this jealousy amongst members or, you know, other people. And then selfish ambition is self-promoting, selfishness, self-righteousness. Like, there's this self-focus that looks to get ahead, right?
Right.
And so, like, he expands on this in verse 15, and he calls it earthly, which is of the world.
Yeah.
Natural, which means that you're subject to your appetites and passions, and demonic, which means that it proceeds from or resembles evil spirits, or is just demon-like.
Yeah, like,
and we talked about that before, where it's just like, there's a type of faith that the demons have.
Yeah.
The mental ascent piece of faith, where they're like, we believe the thing that you believe.
Yeah, right.
They know who God is. They believe who Jesus is. Like, you can still have a mental ascent in that space and not have full faith that is Jesus affirming and loyalty, enacted loyalty toward him, which is always toward others, right? Like,
yeah,
like my enacted loyalty toward Christ reveals itself in my action towards others and my concern for others.
Yeah.
When I don't do that, when my concern is me,
yeah,
and me getting ahead and my rights,
yeah,
it is demonic. Mm. And I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
James is.
Yeah.
Who's repeating Jesus?
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
But we have this sense that's just like, my rights, it's okay to fight for my rights. As an American, true.
Yeah.
That is true. It is your right to fight for your rights.
Yeah.
Yep. As a Christian, you have to wrestle with it. You have to.
Yeah.
Like, you can't not wrestle with it. Yeah. And if you don't and just settle on the American way, then you have to acknowledge not the way of Jesus.
Yeah.
The American way is not the way of Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus, the way of Jesus is not the American way. They're not the same thing.
Right.
They're just not. Yeah. The Constitution is not the Bible.
Right.
Most of our founding fathers were theists, not Christians.
Right.
Like, those are different things. And so I think it's important that in verse 16 he points out that selfish ambition and envy creates disorder and every evil practice. Every worthless and straight out of the world, straight up wicked thing comes from selfish ambition, where you are not others focused, where you are not trying to figure out, how do I serve my neighbor?
Yeah.
How do I love my neighbor? How do I love my enemy? I don't have the answer specifically for those.
Yeah.
But if you're not asking that question, then you're like, you're straight up missing the thing. And if your focus is, I don't care about my neighbor more than I care about my rights and me getting ahead, James calls that demonic and says that it creates disorder and every evil practice.
Right.
Hmm. And people would be like, yeah, like abortion? Like, like, maybe, but I think you're missing the point.
Right.
Oh, so we should just allow abortion? No, I'm saying that you should create programs and establish institutions that are others focused and that help people so that their only choice is not abortion.
Yeah.
So that they have other choices.
Right.
Oh, but we need to fight late term abortions because they want to kill 9-month term babies. No, they don't.
Yeah.
No, they don't. There's not one woman that carries a baby to 8 months and wakes up one morning and is just like, I'm done doing this, and then goes and terminates it.
Right.
Not one woman. Like, right. That doesn't happen. That's not the norm. It's right. Not even close to the norm.
Yeah, yeah.
So there aren't people out there having late-term abortions because they want to kill 9-month-term babies.
Yeah, right.
That's not happening. Mm-hmm. It's women that feel like, medically, I have no choice.
Yeah.
And I have to make a really hard decision. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to make that really hard decision. And the problem is that you made it for them. Right. And you don't offer them support in it.
Right.
In fact, not only that, you want to call them murderers and send them to jail.
Right.
Some people want the death sentence, which is a contradiction in terms right. anyway.
Right.
And I know this isn't a discussion about abortion, but like, that is going to come up. Yeah, evil practices. Yeah. How about the fact that hundreds and thousands of Christians stormed the U.S. Capitol because they believed a lie and they had selfish ambition and envy and jealousy and anger and malice.
Right.
And it created every evil practice on January 6, 2021. Mm-hmm. How about that? How about that evil practice?
They brought nooses.
They brought nooses and crosses.
Yeah.
And prayed while they called for executing Mike Pence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And defecated in the hall after praying.
Yeah, right.
Like, every evil practice.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. And so I don't have I don't hold the world to any specific standard. I absolutely hold Christians to every standard that Jesus puts out there.
Yeah.
And if it comes off as negative and unloving, like, then wrestle with why you feel like it's negative and unloving to be called to a place where you are learning to be an expert of Christ that is others focused and seeking true wisdom, which let me read verse 17.
Yeah.
The things that they say that wisdom from above creates. Wisdom from above looks like this. It's pure, which means that it's clean from every fault. It's immaculate, spotless, and unblemished. Hmm. Okay? It's peaceable, which means it brings peace with it.
Yeah.
Wisdom from above brings peace with it. Okay? It's gentle, which means it's equitable and fair. It creates equality, and it's fair. It's reasonable, which means it's compliant, as in it's entreatable, which means easy to petition or make requests to. So wisdom from above means if I have wisdom from above, it should be easy for you to make a request to me, right? It's full of mercy, which means full of kindness and goodwill towards the afflicted in a way that moves them to care for them and undo their affliction.
Yeah.
Right? It's also full of good fruits, which read Galatians 5.
Yeah, right.
That's all the fruits. Gentleness, kindness, love. Right? Yeah. It's also unwavering, which means there's no ambiguity. There's only certainty. It cannot be interpreted any other way except certainty in Christ. That's it. And the last one is it's without hypocrisy, which means it's sincere and genuine.
Yeah.
It's not double-faced. It doesn't tell you one thing and do another, right?
Right.
And so it wraps up this space. Like James wraps up this space with this idea of righteousness. It says the seeds of righteousness are sown. I think is what he says. What's he say?
At the very end.
Yeah.
It says...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I was going to say, and the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace.
And so remember we talked about righteousness is this uprightness and virtue that honors God and others, right? Like it seeks to create right standing between God and others. Because we are seeking uprightness between us, God, and us and others, right? And so wisdom promotes harmony between people. Like, not just Christians. It's not about unity. It's about creating harmony with people. And in Acts 2:47, it says this, like, this is the early church. Acts 2:47, it says, this starting in 46, actually, they ate their food with joyful and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all people. Wow. That favor of all people was not just the other Christians in the house eating dinner with them. It was people in their community that were not Jewish Christians that they sought to maintain right standing with, and they sought harmony with, because wisdom from above creates harmony with other people, right? And so this is what I wrote down. I said, we as followers of Jesus in the pursuit of right relationships with God and with other people seek to sow the seeds of tranquility, hoping that it will grow into harmony among us with other people. And we do it as bringers of harmony. Like our only job, we are ambassadors of reconciliation, crying, come back to God. And that can't happen outside of harmonious interaction with other people.
Yeah.
Right? And wisdom does that.
Yeah.
Wisdom does that. And so if we are screaming, you know, quote unquote truth at the top of our lungs,
right?
And actually, quote unquote truth and truth and love,
right,
at the top of our lungs, and it is creating disharmony among people.
Right.
The response, the onus is on us, because the Bible also says, as far as it concerns you, live peaceably with other people.
Yeah,
that means as far as you are able to impact it, live peaceably with other people. You don't take up arms. You don't listen to Donald Trump Jr. standing on a stage saying, "Hey, turn the other cheek worked for a while, but it's not working anymore.
Yeah, right.
Jesus didn't say that.
Yeah, right.
You don't listen to him.
Right.
You don't listen to him. He's wrong. Right. Oh, isn't that dehumanizing? No. It's straight up, the fool is wrong.
Right.
He's wrong.
Yeah.
And that's not wise. It's actually selfish ambition.
Yeah, right.
That's demonic.
Yeah.
And creates every evil thing. Yeah. And so, like, for me, it's a hard thing to not wrestle with. Like, when people are just like, oh, man, you're just a liberal communist, Bruce. I'm like, no, I'm not. One, I don't think you understand what that means. But two, like, I have conservative views. I have liberal views. I don't think you understand the definition of liberal, but whatever. Yeah. I think you think that liberal means Democrat. That's not what that means. There's a whole other definition of that.
Yeah.
And I think that you think conservative means Christian, and that's not true. And so...
I mean, the early church... Yeah. I mean, totally embodied. I mean, communism is community.
Yeah, there's some problems with it, but...
I mean, the early church said, sell all your belongings, and then we can, you know, work among us. It's like, there's no selfish ambition in that when you literally give all of your belongings.
I think that that's wisdom from up above.
You have nothing to gain because you have nothing. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, so the only thing you have is just helping others and, like, not othering other people.
Right.
But.
Like, wisdom from above caused them to sell all that they had so that nobody was with need. Right.
Right.
And they divvied it out as needs were.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Bruce, don't you live in a $450,000 house? I do. Mm-hmm. I do. And I'm still wrestling with it. I'm not doing it perfect. But what I do know is I'm called to wrestle with it. I'm called to wrestle with it.
Yeah.
So.
And at some point, you'll pay this house off and then bring your whole community to Scotland.
Yeah.
With all of us. Like, you'll pay for all of us because we'll all be in need at that point.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe that's what happens.
And then we'll all start our own village. And then
if they would let us do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But although we have talked about, like, there's the there is a missionary organization there where we could move to, like, they call them schemes, which is their, like, projects.
Uh-huh.
We could move to one of their schemes and, like, start a church. And the goal, I think their goal is you start a church and then within 3 years you hand it over to a Scottish pastor.
Oh.
Like, which is, to me, I'm like, yeah, cool. Awesome.
Let's do it.
I'm in. So. Yeah.
I will literally sell all my belongings and we'll go as long as I can eat. And, like,
oh, you'll be able to eat. I don't know how you feel about haggis, but.
I mean, you know, I get with some barbecue sauce. I'm sure.
I had it on a burger once and it wasn't.
Wasn't
good.
Too bad?
It wasn't good.
It wasn't good.
I didn't like it.
Well, I mean, it's like you can test.
It wasn't horrible.
Yeah.
But it wasn't good.
Yeah. That's why you just say, hold the haggis, give me some bangers. You know, that's it.
And then, oh, like, bangers. Bangers,
you know what I'm
and
saying?
Mash, yeah.
And then,
my wife is just like, you're so dumb, stop it. I just want to go to a pub and eat bangers and mash. And she's like, stop it.
Exactly. So, yeah.
I would walk into a bar and I'd be like, I'd like to get a right proper pub meal. And she's just like, shut up.
They're like,
that's not how American. They say that.
Yeah. They're like, you're American. You've watched Sherlock Holmes, haven't you?
Dumb American.
Yeah.
What do you want to eat?
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, can you put the footy on the TV? It always sounded nicer. It's just like, oh, oi, dumb American. What can I get you? Or, I can't even do it.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to watch David Beckham?
I think they think he's a traitor.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah.
They think that James, he's a talk show host.
Corden
is a traitor.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're British and you come to America, oh, yeah, for sure. Cool. All right. Well, that was the end of chapter 3.
Yeah.
We got 2 more chapters left.
Yeah. So it should only take us 14 weeks.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. One thing I was going to say, I was looking this up here. We are getting close to 3,000 downloads.
Oh, cool.
We're at 2,883. So if you, wouldn't mind sharing, you know, the podcast and, just you know, just shouting us out. Like, hey, listen to this podcast, really cool episodes, really cool guys. Like, they have a drink every podcast. It's really fun. Like, you know, we would definitely appreciate it.
Right, yeah.
Because we're getting close to 3,000 downloads. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. Not bad, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. 3,000.
My goal for this year was to get to 4,000. So we're in May. We're almost at 3,000. Actually, we're in June. I mean, we're in June.
Yeah. You think that we could? Yeah, maybe. Maybe we can.
I was thinking, why not? I mean, let's get the word out there. Everyone share a link with a friend or family. Maybe one of your favorite episodes, and just be like, hey, check this out, and then go from there. Or if you have suggestions, you're like, you know what? Enough with your blabbering on James, I want to hear whatever.
Then I'll tell you off air.
Okay. All right. Secret things that we're going
to
talk about.
Because we might not do it, but I want to.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Well, that's it for this episode. You know, thanks so much for listening. Like I said, share the link. Give us a, you know, rate us 1 to 5 on Amazon and, you know, Spotify and Apple Music and, you know, all those different places. And yeah. I guess that's it. So yep. Keep on following God's word each and every day. And we will see you next time for part, I don't even know. What was it?
I think it's 7.
7.
Yep.
James 4.
Yep.
All right. Till then, cool. We'll see you later.
See you later.
Peace. Thank you for listening to Fold and Share Theology. You can follow Bruce on multiple social media platforms at bpags2, as well as Justin Mercier on Instagram at justinmercier13. Additionally, you can check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Folding Chair Theology. Until then, keep unfolding God's word each and every day.